Ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Andy Finn Show. I'm Andy Finn, the Finn Man, and for the next hour, you're in Finland. Today is Monday, September 10th, and today is the day before the 6th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks, and it's the day of General David Petraeus's testimony in front of Congress, along with Ambassador Ryan Crocker, U.S. Ambassador to Iraq. We've been waiting for Petraeus' testimony for 9 months, and it was finally here today. So I apologize to those of you who are tired hearing about the war, because tonight we are going to dissect not just what Petraeus and Crocker said today, but the politics behind all of this, the two sides, how they're coming at it, and kind of the future of Iraq and what we might end up getting out of all this. Anyway, let me start with the Petraeus report. So basically, it's a mixed bag, but overall, we're making progress. And we've turned the corner, and we just need 6 or 9 more months, and it's hard work. Now, if any of those sound familiar, it's because... Oh, yeah, and we need to stay the course. I left that out. If any of those sound familiar, it's because it's almost funny, except we're dealing with war. But the Bush administration has worn out each of those phrases over the last 6 years. For a while, they were saying, we're turning the corner, and then they stopped because it sounded ridiculous when people strung them all together and they realized what they had. And then we had, we'll get to stay the course, because Bush came out a couple of months ago and said that he never said stay the course. And then we had turned the corner, but we also had what was the other one? Not light at the end of the tunnel. That was Vietnam. It's hard work. The president kept telling us for the first 2 or 3 years after we went into Iraq that we're making progress and it's hard work. Those were the other two expressions. And, of course, I think what happened was the we're making progress and it's hard work fell into disfavor because he said it too much. So we don't hear either of those. We don't hear we're turning the corner. We do hear we need 6 to 9 more months. In fact, there's a website that pointed out that this is Thomas Friedman's favorite line. Of course, he gets accused, Friedman, a columnist for the New York Times and author of the book on globalization called The World is Flat. Thomas Friedman gets accused of being an extreme lefty liberal because... Well, I guess maybe because he thinks for a living. But he backed the Iraq war, and he continues to say, we just need 6 to 9 months. And he said it so many times over the last few years, and somebody documented this, that they've now titled 6 months a Friedman unit. And so you can go on the web, and if you look up a Friedman unit, you can read about this. But there's also a pretty sad timeline that shows not just Thomas Friedman and the dates he said, a few more months, 6 to 9 months, we'll know in 6 to 9 months whether or not we're going to be able to make this work. But Bush, Cheney, Condi Rice, Rumsfeld, all of these folks have, General Myers, other generals, they've all used this yardstick of another 6 to 9 months, we'll know. We'll know if the Iraqis are serious, we'll know if we're making progress, we'll know. Well, son of a gun, if in January... to buy time, Bush didn't say, I need 6 to 9 months, you know, come back and see us in September. There's been some military progress, and now what Petraeus says today is, we're making progress, but we need 6 to 9 months. what a coincidence. So forgive me if I'm a little cynical, but tonight we are going to talk about some of the counter evidence. Petraeus and Crocker spent all day today explaining how much progress we've made, although to their credit, they did hedge their bets. That's the wrong word. I want to be kinder to them because I don't think that Petraeus and Crocker are being disingenuous. I don't think they're lying. You know, MoveOn.org took out a full-page ad in the New York Times today saying General Petraeus or General Betrayus. And I didn't even go out and read the whole text, but conservatives are up in arms about it. In fact, Bill O'Reilly, rather than focus on the actual issues surrounding Iraq, which doesn't get him ratings, and I think he suspects are indefensible, he went on the attack about this General Betrayus ad. And of course, he loves to take on MoveOn.org and wants to paint everybody on the left or every Democrat with that brush. But in any case, the issue in Iraq today is very, very serious, and I think Petraeus and Crocker are serious men. But here's the thing. Think about if we had a housing problem, like, let's say, in New Orleans, and we do. And let's assume that rather than sending FEMA down to handle it all, we sent the head of housing and urban development to work on the redoing the housing. Is there anybody who believes that the head of the agency, the head of the program to rebuild, would be in a position to be objective? Would they be the best judge? Because they're there on the ground. And would you trust them more than you would trust, let's say, independent analyses? I think we know the answer. The answer is no, of course not. But for some reason, because Petraeus is wearing the military uniform, and military people in general put their lives on the line just by joining the military, they're willing to die. We imbue these folks with all kinds of virtues that the average human being simply doesn't have. And I don't mean that he doesn't have integrity. I think the head of HUD probably has integrity, and the head of FEMA. The problem is that it's very difficult to step outside your own biases. So Petraeus, first of all, is a military guy. He's a can-do guy. The military, when the president says, I need you to do something, they say, yes, sir, we can do it. Now they're going to, in private, give him candid advice if he's willing to hear it. But in public, their role is, yes, sir, we're going to do it. Secondly, Petraeus himself is, well, we'll get to this in the next segment or two, but Petraeus himself comes at this with a bit of a bias, and like I say, we'll talk about that later. But just in general, people are not usually capable of stepping outside of their own situation and seeing it objectively. So I think he can do as good a job as the next person of stepping outside his role, his job, and evaluating. But there's no reason to think his report is definitive. There have been other reports that have come out in the last week or two, and Bush is going to issue his report in the next 2 weeks. But the other reports from the GAO, the Government Accountability Office, that's a nonpartisan arm of the Congress, and let's see, there was the NIE that came out, the National Intelligence Estimate, the most recent one, are more pessimistic about Iraq without going into all the specifics. And then there's polls that are coming out about what the American people think about the chances in Iraq and what the Iraqi people think about the surge. And so we need to weigh these things together. And so that's what we're going to do tonight. And when we come back, we're going to talk just a little bit about the last of the Bush quotes, last of the Bush slogans, which is stay the course, and which 2 months ago he denied, when he started the surge, he denied that we were ever stay the course. This is actually pretty funny, as funny as it can be in the midst of all the war.
Hi, I'm Andy Finn. You know, even if someone handed me $1 million this morning, I'd still be doing my radio show on WEBR. Why? Because I have commitment. I have dedication. Plus, I signed a contract. Now, if you'll do the same, I'll have one more dedicated listener. Don't worry, you can void your contract if I ever get obsessed with liberals, or gays, the flag, the pledge, embryonic stem cells, the UN, illegal immigrants, missing white women, or the country of France. So tune in the Andy Finn Show on WEBR, Mondays at 10 p.m. Hey, if you had $1 million, you could buy a radio station.
Yes, you could. We are back on the Andy Finn Show, and it is September 10th, 2007, and the day one of General Petraeus' testimony in front of Congress. So you can hear the webcasts of previous shows at my website at andyfinn.us, but today we are on WEBR Radio in Fairfax, Virginia. In any case, let's listen to the last of the Bush platitudes or phrases, right? We covered stay the course. No, we're covering stay the course now. We covered we're turning the corner, which he used many, many times. We covered it's hard work. We covered we're making progress. And here is stay the course. Now, he said stay the course many times. We heard it so many times we were sick of it. And then he appears on George Stephanopoulos' This Week, the Sunday morning ABC show, on what date was this? This was in 2006, right before the election. I want to say it was the 22nd of October, 2 weeks before the 2006 election. And, of course, the surge was coming, the Iraq Study Group report was coming out, and so here is George W. Bush denying he ever said stay the course, followed by four times, one in 2003, one in 2004, one in 2005, one in 2006, when in fact he was all about staying the course.
James Baker says that he's looking for something between cutting them and stay the course.
Well, listen, we've never been stay the course, George. We will complete the mission. We will do our job and help achieve the goal, but we're constantly adjusting to tactics.
And that's
constantly.
We've never been stay the course. Who are these guys kidding? That was President Bush 2 weeks before the 2006 election. October 22nd, with George Stephanopoulos on a Sunday morning. Here's four cuts in a row. Here's George W. Bush in 2003, December 15th.
We will stay the course until the job is done, Steve. And the temptation is to try to get the president or somebody to put a timetable on the definition of getting the job done. We're just going to stay the course.
And here's George W. Bush in 2004, on April 16th, staying the course.
And I appreciate the Prime Minister understanding that vision as well. It's a wonderful feeling to have a strong ally in believing in the power of free societies and liberty. And that's why we're going to stay the course in Iraq.
And here's George W. Bush in 2005, on August 4th, staying the course.
We will stay the course. We will complete the job in Iraq.
And finally, here's George W. Bush in 2006, on August 30th, staying the course. Just 2 weeks before he tells George Stephanopoulos, we've never been stay the course.
We will stay the course. We will help this young Iraqi democracy succeed. And victory in Iraq will be a major ideological triumph in the struggle of the 21st century.
They must think we're stupid. Well, they They definitely think we're stupid, apparently. The other piece about that is when you listen to Bush's rationale, this thing about the great ideological struggle of the 21st century, and this whole thing about the terrorists hate freedom. I think this is a large part of why people get so frustrated with the Bush administration and Bush himself, because they make arguments that don't make a lot of sense, and then when people push back, they call you unpatriotic, that you're not sticking with the president and the troops. And so I'm going to get back to David Petraeus in a minute, but the argument that Bush makes every time he talks about stay the course over these last few years, the rationale for the war evolved, of course, from WMD to freedom and all of that. But this idea that this is the great ideological struggle of the 20th century, no, it's not. The terrorists are morally bankrupt. They don't have an ideology. And I'm not convinced they think they can bring down the West. I mean, they sucker punched us on 9/11 and caused a lot of damage. But, I mean, Colin Powell was just out this month with an interview in GQ. And while he's trying to redeem himself, he hasn't quite made up for the fact that he was a shill for Bush and presented all kinds of things that aren't true. He apologizes, apparently, in this interview. But one of the things he says is that, and we need people of his stature saying this, I've been saying it for 5 years, the terrorists cannot end our way of life. You know, I've listened to the right-wing talk show hosts talk about how this is the equivalent of World War II. No, it's not the equivalent of World War II. The terrorists don't really have an army. They used our own planes against us. They had box cutters. They don't have what Hitler had or what the Japanese had. They can do very little damage to our way of life, really. Once we secure our site, our weapons and our oil tanks and our nuclear power plants and our bridges and things, there's very little they can do. And they certainly can't bring down our way of life. So this is not an ideological struggle in that regard. It's an ideological struggle within Islam, perhaps. They've got this viral version of, you know, this bastardized version of Islam, and it'd be nice if moderates took control of things. But this is hardly an ideological struggle between the West and, you know, Islamo-fascists or whatever Bush wants to call them. I just think that kind of rhetoric is nonsense. As is the nonsense about the terrorists hate our freedom and all that. No, they don't hate freedom. They haven't really thought about it enough. What I think it comes down to is that, you know, Osama bin Laden, for all his wackiness, has several specific complaints about the U.S. We've covered it before on the air here. But pre-9/11, his complaint was that we went into the Middle East with American troops in 1990, and we stayed. We put permanent, at least semi-permanent, some say permanent bases in Saudi Arabia, 12 of them, and he argued this was the infidels occupying the country where the two holiest shrines of Islam are, and he vowed to do something about it. And guess what? Quietly, since September 11th, George W. Bush has taken all those bases out of Saudi Arabia. I don't know how many troops we still have in Saudi Arabia, if any, but my understanding is we've taken more than 90% of our presence out of Saudi Arabia, which is exactly what Osama bin Laden wanted. Now, we did it because the Saudis got nervous and wanted us out, and we had plenty of need in Iraq, right next door for troops and air bases and things. But basically, George W. Bush gave Osama bin Laden what he said he wanted and the reason, you know, he attacked us on 9/11. You never hear anybody talk about that. And I'm not saying, you know, he caved into the terrorists. The Saudis said, we need you to get out of here. We're getting nervous. But now, Bush's answer to the complaint that Osama has, and it's not that we're going to satisfy Osama. I think what it comes down to is that he's able to get followers around the Middle East and in the Muslim world because he makes an argument that we are occupying Muslim or Arab countries. And so it's hard to refute that. Now, it's not that we're going to leave Afghanistan right away, but the fact we've got 150,000 troops in Iraq and that George W. Bush thought that was a reasonable thing to do after 9/11, it just highlights the bad judgment that we see from him. But I'm a little off track here, so we are going to come back and talk about David Petraeus and his report a little bit more after this.